is proud to co-sponsor Cross Cultural Rhythms at the 40th Avenue Garage, a showcase of music, dance, and spoken word performances, all sharing roots in African culture. Cross Cultural Rhythms will take place on Saturday, October 18th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the 40th Avenue Garage, 1711 Southeast 40th Avenue in Portland. This is a benefit for the Oboe Addy Legacy Project. Confirmed performances include Ghanaian drumming and dance, South African boot dance and music, multiple spoken word artists, and more. Again, that's Cross Cultural Rhythms, Saturday, October 18th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the 40th Avenue Garage in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune in Wednesdays for an afternoon of jazz. Hosts of Jazz Lives, A Jazz World, and Jazz in the Afternoon play the very best in jazz music. From the historical to the present, and jazz of all stripes. Swinging, smoking, bluesy, funky, new and old, but all good. That's Wednesday afternoons from noon to 4 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And good morning. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. First up this morning, we've got Political Perspectives, and we're going to speak with Gordy Molitor, Interim Executive Director of the Gifford Pinchot Task Force. He'll talk about the organization's mission and projects, the federal lawsuit to stop mining in the National Forest, and the upcoming fundraiser, Restoring Volcano Country. At 9:30, host Jen Davis speaks with Jerry Greenfield, co-founder of Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream, about his support for Oregon Ballot Measure 92. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre speaks is going to host Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints reports on the case of New York Times journalist James Rising, caught in DOJ's crosshairs. Also a new speech by Flashpoint's regular contributor and former high-level CIA analyst Ray McGovern. And at 11 o'clock on the Food Show, Fermentation Festival co-organizer David Barber previews this year's festival. Ian Harris talks about Dutch ovens, and Gabby De Leon and Danielle Knott talk about Render, a new feminist food and culture quarterly here in Portland. Thank you, KBOO members, for your great support during our recent membership drive. We ended early and excitedly with your great support. Thank you so much. And we're going to go right now to Political Perspectives. Kathleen is going to speak with with Gordy Molitor. Kathleen.
Thank you, Tammy. This is Kathleen Stevenson for Political Perspectives. My guest is Gordy Molitor. He is Interim Executive Director of the Gifford Pinchot Task Force. The task force is holding a fundraising event this Thursday. That's tomorrow, October 16th, at Holocene at 1001 Southeast Morrison. It's called Restoring Volcano Country, and we'll be talking more about that event during this interview. But first, let me welcome Gordy Molitor. Thanks very much for coming into KBOO today.
Thank you very much for having me, Kathleen. It's a pleasure to be here.
First, tell us what Gifford Pinchot Task Force actually is.
Gifford Pinchot Task Force is a nonprofit corporation that works to conserve the Gifford Pinchot National Forest in the state of Washington. We're one of the only voices for conservation of the forest, and we've been working on that issue since about 1985.
And what is the area that it covers, that the Gifford Pinchot National Forest actually covers?
Well, it covers volcano country. We call it the heart of the Cascades. It's a forest that's located between Mount St. Helens, includes the Mount St. Helens National Volcanic Monument, and it goes east to the summit of Mount Adams, and it starts in the north from just south of the Mount Rainier National Park, so at the Tatoosh Range, the Goat Rocks, and goes all the way down to the Columbia River Gorge scenic area. Includes lava beds, alpine areas, subalpine areas, mostly wet forest, and a little bit on the just south of Mount Adams, a drier forest.
And tell us a little bit about the history of the kind of issues that the task force has taken on over its almost 30-year history.
Yes, yes. It's been a very active organization and I think very crucial to the conservation of the forest. It started in 1985. And was as a task force. I guess we still are a task force, although we see ourselves as more permanent than that. We started as a task force to help advocate for the creation of the Mount St. Helens National Monument and to work on stopping the cutting of old growth timber. At that time, they thought if they get the monument created and they stop old growth timber, that's sort of the end of conservation issues. I think we have learned that they go on, and the task force continues to play an important role in conservation issues in the forest.
And why wasn't that the end? What did it turn out that the monument didn't really cover?
Well, the monument covers, I think that area has been protected. We're working with the Forest Service to acquire additional lands that would be part of the monument, but pretty much that part has been done. But I think we've realized there are a lot of other issues that need to be done in order to conserve the forest. The mining issue, for example, there were two grazing allotments on the forest. There are issues of how to maintain all of the roads and so forth.
So let's talk about the mining issue as one of the threats to the Gifford Pinchot National Forest. Right now there is one drilling proposal that is still somewhat in play.
That's right.
Can you talk about that, what that is all about?
Okay. Well, first of all, people need to realize that in the west of the United States, the rights or the ownership of land is separate from the mineral rights underneath the land. So, for example, in areas where they're fracking, a company can own the mineral rights underneath and demand that they have access to your land and build a road in there and set up shop, pay you for the bit of land that they've taken up with their road and so forth, maybe with some of the area that they pollute. But anyway, the issue is that it's separate from land ownership. So within the Gifford Pinchot and many national forests, you'll see a little two picks crossed, and that's a mining site. And often there are mineral rights owned by someone other than the Forest Service. And in this area, there is, so north of the Mount St. Helens Monument, is a mining claim. And it has been three times now over the last, I think, 10 or 15 years, mining companies have attempted to get access to their mining claim. So far, we've been able to stop that all three times. The latest effort is an effort by Ascot Mining, a Canadian mining firm, that wants to prospect for copper. Doing the copper would either be a large open pit mine within sight of the volcanic monument, and could cause pollution to the Green River. So we've been fighting that issue, and we've won in federal court. We got the decision in August. That the Ascot has appealed the decision. The other defendants in the case, the Bureau of Land Management and the Forest Service, haven't yet decided if they're going to appeal. That's going to be a very important fight in a federal court here in Oregon. If you want to get into more why that's important, not only for the Gifford Pinchot Forest, but also nationally, we can talk about that, but it gets sort of legal.
That's okay. Yes, it would be interesting to know why the average person should care about this beyond the fact that it's what you just said in view of Mount St. Helens.
Right. Well, one of the arguments that the Gifford Pinchot Task Force and our attorneys put forward was that the land over this mining claim was purchased with land and water conservation funds from the federal government. When the Forest Service purchased it, they said that the purpose of that procurement was to use that area for recreation. When they did their analysis to give the permit to Ascot Mining to do their prospecting, to build roads and to drill more holes and pump more water in and out of the ground, they did not consider recreation as one of the factors. And so we said, well, you have to do that because you purchased it with these lands. Millions of acres around the United States have been purchased with these federal funds and are therefore protected under the purpose for which they were purchased. So if Ascot, or if the federal government, the Forest Service and BLM hasn't decided yet whether they're going to appeal, but if they would appeal and if they would win, it would take off protection for the land and water conservation properties, not only in the Gifford-Pinchot Forest, but millions of acres around the country. So it's something that we want to win, not only for our forest, but for other conservation.
So you're saying that other areas of the in other areas of the country, a mining company, for example, could say that they had a claim to the land, even though they and originally with this proviso of recreation, but that they would not have to fulfill that.
That's
aspect
right.
of things.
Right. It might be not only a mining company, it might be a developer or someone wanting to build a road or a resort.
I'm speaking with Gordy Molitor. He is interim executive director of the Gifford-Pinchot Task Force, and we're talking about the task force, what it does, what kind of threats that it is confronting, threats to the Gifford-Pinchot National Forest, including mining. Are there other major environmental threats that you or the task force has worked on over the years?
Yes. As I said, one of the reasons the task force was formed was to work on stopping the cutting of old growth timber. We've done that. I think that is pretty much as successful. We worked on trying to curtail grazing in the forest. There were two large grazing allotments. One of those is ended. The other one, I think, is under better management. One of the things that we're trying to do is continue to monitor that, and we work with, for example, the Friends of Mount Adams on monitoring that that issue. We've worked on purchasing property north of Mount St. Helens through assisting the Forest Service to purchase the property and the Trust for Public Lands, and then that property would be added to the monument. We're working on with several of the collaboratives, so there are forest collaboratives where the community and conservation organizations and elected officials and so forth can get together and talk about issues that relate to the forest. It's a sounding board for the forest. We participate in a number of those areas. We're, for example, with the one in the north, the Pinchot Partners, we're talking with them about huckleberry restoration. If the forest grows too tall, there's not enough sun, the huckleberries don't produce fruits. If there are no fruits for the huckleberries, certain insects aren't there, certain birds aren't there, certain animals that eat the fruits aren't there, and so forth. Plus, it's a recreation and a financial harvesting opportunity for people in the forest. So what can be done to promote huckleberries and how to do that in a way that doesn't damage other parts of the forest? We're also talking with them about looking at roads. The forest itself is required to go through a transportation analysis. In that area, there are 4,000 miles of roads. The Forest Service doesn't have money to maintain a third of those roads. So what we're working with the Forest Service on is helping them identify which roads are needed for public transportation to recreation areas, to areas where people are going to do extraction of huckleberries, of bear grass, and timber and which ones are a threat ecologically to the forest in terms of erosion, pollution of streams, and so forth, and help them focus their maintenance dollars on those and then either closing or decommissioning other roads. That'll be a big effort over the next few years. We're trying to involve citizens in that effort through something we call citizen science. And so what we do is organize trips of people that go into the forest really under the direction of the Forest Service. They want us to look at a certain area, and we have teams that have a checklist of issues that they're supposed to be looking at, and they literally walk a road looking for culverts that are filled up and the water is now running down the road and causing erosion, looking for areas where, you know, the road maybe wasn't built quite right and causing erosion and so forth. And so that's part of the science, citizen science. That we also have teams that go into the forest to monitor, set up wildlife cameras to document the existence and usage of the forest by different species of wildlife. The first week I was on board, one of our board members came in real excited. He had just returned from collecting the data from one of his wildlife cameras, and he had found a mother bear and three of her cubs. And not only had they walked past the camera, they had spent some time playing in front of the camera. So that series of slides is on our website.
What is your website?
GPTaskForce.org.
So people can go there and see some of these wildlife pictures that have been collected.
That's right. And learn more about our other activities, including fighting in the mine.
And you mentioned development. Is development a threat to areas of the Gifford Pinchot National Forest?
The area that we thought was probably the most at risk for development, and it wasn't really in the forest, but is the High Lakes area just north of the monument. This is the area that we were trying to procure. It's a very high elevation area. It's quite remote, so if you were going to access it, you'd need to build in more roads into a very fragile environment. That was the area, I think, that we were trying to stop development. So was the county commissioners at that time. They put a six-month moratorium on it. The future of that area is still in play. But, you know, we'll see.
So let's talk about this event, this fundraiser that the Gifford Pinchot Task Force is holding. It's called Restoring Volcano Country. It's a KBOO co-sponsorship, and it's happening tomorrow. Tell us about what's going on there.
Well, first, Kathleen, I want to thank KBOO for being our media sponsor. We appreciate the support. So what we're trying to do is get some of our friends and supporters together, really to talk to each other and learn more about the Gifford Pinchot Forest, and to help us raise some funding to continue to support the forest. So we'll have some artwork there, some of it by our board member, other by community members. We'll have live music by Ed and the Red Reds. And
what kind of music is that?
I think it's more like rock.
Okay.
I'm not sure. And then the forest, then we'll have a presentation by our vice chair, Rob Scheller, who's a PhD and a teacher at Portland State University. He's an expert in forest management. And he'll be talking about the Gifford Pinchot Forest, its past, and some of the work that the Gifford Pinchot Task Force has done in preserving the forest, and then talk about the future of the forest and what are the threats to the forest. And he, I think, will be focusing on the threats to the forest caused by climate change. So that's going to be a new focus for the Gifford Pinchot Task Force. How do you make our help to make the forest more resilient to climate change? He's going to sort of kick off that effort.
Mm. And so that is tomorrow night, and that is, what time does that start?
It starts at 5:30 at Holocene on Southeast Morrison.
And is there a reason that you're having it in Portland, even though most of, well, the entire Gifford Pinchot National Forest is in Washington?
I think we're having it in Portland is because we have a lot of sponsors and a lot of donors from the Portland area. We also have fundraising events in Washington, but we have a number of people in Portland who support our efforts. There are a number of people here that use the Gifford Pinchot as a recreation site and as a place to collect mushrooms and huckleberries and so forth. I know that I've spent a lot of time up in that area myself, even though I'm a resident of Portland. And there are a lot of Portland people that appreciate the Gifford Pinchot Forest. And this is an opportunity for all of them to give back.
What's an aspect of the forest that people that you enjoy that you think people might not be that aware of?
Well, it's a great place to hike. It's a great place to climb. It's a great place to collect huckleberries. It's a great place to ski in the winter and snowshoe. It's a great place to explore because you've got lava beds and beautiful rivers and alpine areas and wet, dense forest and dry forests on the east side and wildlife, cougars and bears and elk and deer and wolverine and maybe someday wolves. So it's a wonderful area. I've climbed in it, I've skied in it, I've hiked in it. I love the area.
And let's talk a little bit more about the cougars and bears. You mentioned that the films that have been collected so far under this program are able to be seen on the website, on your website. Talk about that wildlife program, wildlife tracking project, a little bit more as to what that is and how that works.
Okay. There are only a few of the many, many pictures that we've collected over the last 2 or 3 years on our website. There's that series of slides about the bear and three cubs, which is rare. There's also rare night photo of three cougars passing in front of our cameras. But what we're doing is trying to document the presence and use of the forest by different animals. And we'll tie that into a large, we'll use that and put it into a database so that we can just document where those are. It will be used, will hopefully tie into a larger effort that's being done by, I think it's the zoo in Seattle, which has trying to collect that kind of data from around the country from wildlife cameras and citizen science surveys. We'll also use it in planning for wildlife corridors. So what is the movement of animals within the forest? So where have they been? So we know where they have been?
Yes, I was wondering about the significance of the Gifford Pinchot National Forest as a corridor. Is it part of the corridor system for some of the mammals, large mammals?
Well, yeah, it goes right along the spine of the Cascades. So it's an important link between Mount Rainier National Park and then south.
Okay. You're listening to an interview with Gordy Molitor. He is the interim executive director of the Gifford Pinchot Task Force, and the task force is holding a fundraiser this Thursday, that's tomorrow evening, at Holocene, that's at 1001 Southeast Morrison. The event is called Restoring Volcano Country. And is there anything, Gordy, that you'd like to say about the whole concept of restoring volcano country?
Well, restoring volcano country, I think, is sort of the theme of our conservation efforts. We see the national forest as volcano country. As I said, it's got at least two volcanoes in it. It has lava beds from old and extinct volcanoes. So it is volcano country, and we're helping to restore it after decades of overlogging. And so what we're trying to do is we are the voice for conservation and for preservation and restoration of this beautiful area that's been long abused.
And how would someone who may not be able to come to your fundraiser but is interested in getting involved with one of the projects as a volunteer perhaps, how would they go about contacting your organization and becoming involved?
Thanks for that question, Kathleen. There are a number of ways that people can be involved other than attending our fundraiser. We're looking for volunteers to help us with road surveys. So someone that goes out with other members and literally walk or drive roads and collect data on those roads for input into the Forest Service travel analysis. We're working with the Invasive Plants or Native Plant Society on the documentation of the existence of invasive species. So that's getting training in what is an invasive species and then hiking trails and along roads to document where they exist. And then another way of participating is becoming a volunteer and helping to place and monitor and retrieve data and charge batteries at different wildlife stations. And then, of course, everyone's welcome to be an active donor to the Gifford Pinchot Task Force. We'd appreciate that. I think one of the strengths of the task force is the hundreds of people that we have monthly that donate to the task force. And so half of what we spend is we've been able to raise from private donors.
Okay. And anything you think is important to add in the last couple minutes of our interview?
Just that we're very, although we're a Washington-focused organization, we have a strong base in Portland. We hope that we'll have good attendance at our event tomorrow because it's something we're, in a way, doing for our many supporters in Portland. And so we appreciate all their help and look forward to their participation in our event and maybe other volunteer activities.
And this question comes from a caller. I guess they're asking if you have any sightings of Bigfoot.
Well, I was joking with our conservation director the other day. He was showing us pictures of the wildlife cameras, and there he was looking right into one of the wildlife cameras. So I said we had, but other than that one, no.
Okay. Well, Gordy Molitor, I want to thank you very much, and mention again that the event Restoring Volcano Country is tomorrow night. Holocene. KBUCO sponsorship. Holocene is at 1001 Southeast Morrison. Sounds like there's a lot of different things for different people at that event. And if they want more information, again, where can they go?
They can go to our website, gptaskforce.org.
Great. This is Kathleen Stevenson for Political Perspectives. Again, I've been speaking with Gordy Molitor. And stay tuned. Coming up, Jen Davis is going to be speaking with Jerry of Ben & Jerry's.
This is Sun Lee, KBOO's membership director. Thank you to everyone who called in during our fall membership drive. With your amazing support, we reached our $80,000 goal. We would also like to thank all of our volunteers for doing a great job and for making KBOO a great community and radio station. And thank you to all of the restaurants that provided food. For more information on them, visit kboo.fm/food. We are proud to be your radio station and honored to have your support this fall membership drive. Thank you.
Good morning, KBOO. This is Jen Davis. I am the KBOO Vice President on the KBOO Board of Directors, and I am here today interviewing Jerry Greenfield, who is co-founder of Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream. Jerry Greenfield is in town stumping for Measure 92, which calls for the labeling of GMO foods. Is Ben in Colorado right now helping to promote their measure to label GMO foods?
I think Ben is actually back in Vermont right now, and he's probably enjoying the fall foliage in Vermont.
Very nice. So can you clarify? I know that some of our listeners have confusion. We know that you and Ben co-founded Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream,
yep.
And then in 2000, Unilever bought Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream, but you still have an affiliation with the company. Can you talk about your affiliation?
Sure. So as you mentioned, the company was sold in 2000, not something that we wanted to have happen. We would have preferred to stay independent, but the company was a public company at the time, which meant anybody could purchase shares. So since that time, Ben and I are employed at the company. We're employees. We're not involved in the management or the operations.